pretty darn gay so far.
Hello, and welcome to Saving People, Queering Things, the Supernatural podcast where Bobby is finally the main character. Today, we're pulling up to Season 6, Episode 4, Weekend at Bobby's. I'm Noah, he, him.
I'm August, they, them.
I'm Elena, she, they.
And today, we're joined by our fantastic returning guest star, Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah, they, them.
We're so happy to have you back.
I'm excited to be back.
The question I have for my co-host today is, if you spent a weekend at Bobby's, what shenanigans do you think you guys would get up to? What hunts would you hunt?
I would absolutely want to play like a card-based drinking game with him. I feel like that would be really fun.
He'd kick ass at King's Corner.
I feel like I want to do errands with Bobby. I want to do like his rounds around town and just like observe him with the townsfolk and then go back and like make food of some sort, like some sort of Bobby recipe with a whole lot of beer. Just like get drunk and cook after driving around town.
Get drunk and cook. Yeah, that's a vibe.
That's a party.
See, Bobby seems like the kind of person you just really, would just be really enjoyable with.
Yeah, I think I'd want to have like a couple beers and just like learn how to, you know, make hole bullets and shit like that. I feel like that'd be pretty dope.
Listen to him talk about lore stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like listen, just sit there and just let him talk because he just never gets to.
Nope.
Yeah. You just gotta let dad, Bobby be the dad that he can be and just impart knowledge.
I mean, I think all of the above, you know, I wouldn't leave. I would hang out all the time and say, oh yeah, Bobby, you're my adoptive dad. Now that you've met your host for today, it's time to catch you up. If you haven't watched Supernatural recently, here's what you've missed on the road so far. First up, Sarah is going to recap the show up to this point. Are you ready?
As ready as I can be.
Fantastic. 30 seconds on the clock. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, Dad's missing. Dad's dead. Sam's a psychic. Sam's dead. Sam's alive. Dean's dead. Dean's alive. Enter angels. Sam's addicted to demon blood. 66 seals. Enter Lucifer. Enter four horsemen of the apocalypse. Sam jumps in a hole. Apocalypse failed. Dean goes to Lisa. Sam's alive. Monsters are being weird. Grandpa's alive. They have hunting family. Shifter babies. Angel weapons. What's wrong with Sam?
Damn, that was so good. With time to spare.
That was marvelous at every level.
It was so funny, like, writing it out. I was like, okay, this one's dead, this one's alive, this one's dead, this one's alive.
It really is like a pattern. It's just like a nice rhythm.
Poetry. It repeats. Next up, it's Elena's turn to recap this week's episode. Are you ready?
As I'm gonna be.
Fantastic. 3, 2, 1, go.
So we zoom in on Bobby and he is dealing with Crowley and they're having like this weird sexual tension jellyfish that's going on. But they also are talking about how Bobby wants his soul back and he's like, no. And then there's like a hellhound thing. It's a whole problem. But then we go into basically just seeing Bobby's day to day, seeing how he answers all the phones for everybody. He's, you know, dealing with Sam and Dean. He's dealing with Rufus. He's dealing with Jody. And it's really just like seeing all of the shit that Bobby puts up with and he gives the boys what for. And then they help him to get Crowley to give him his soul back and go to Scotland to the end.
Nailed it.
I started meandering there.
But hey, I mean, that's supernatural, so we're good.
Well, yeah, that's like one of my points, and I'll just casually throw it in here and then we can talk more later. But just the editing of this episode is so cool. Like the way the editing is structured, I have many thoughts about it.
I cannot wait to hear more. But before we get there, let's pick some music to accompany us on our journey. So this is what we've got for this week's episode mixtape. Elena, did you want to kick us off?
I will. So mine is kind of a unconventional choice, given all of the content of the song, but I'm going to go with Labor by Paris Paloma. That song that was very, very viral on TikTok. I think it was actually on TikTok as a trend before it was like a released song. It's a song that's basically about like feminism and everything, but it deals with similar things to what Bobby's going through. It's like, you know, all day, every day, therapist, mother maid, like it just basically lists all of these things that you have to be put through by the people that you're around. And that just like very makes me think of Bobby in this episode because he's just there for everybody and is like waiting for somebody to be there for him. And thankfully, unlike in the song, we do get to see that happen and see that Bobby is in fact supported. But I think Labor is a song that very much like sums up where he's at when he's giving them that tirade. So yeah, that's my song pick.
I want to talk more about some of those themes later. So I like that.
Sarah, how about you?
Damn, now my song choice seems really silly.
Oh, but that's good. We want like emotional whiplash in these mixtapes.
Yeah. Okay, so you're going to get it. Goodbye, Earl.
Yes! What a fantastic choice. Say more.
It was literally the only thing that like popped into my head. And I was like, maybe not. And I was like, no, I just have to go with it. Because, you know, Bobby truly would do anything for anyone he loves, including bury a dead body. Maybe start a farm stand, you know.
He contains multitudes.
He really does.
Oh my gosh, that's everything to me. I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't that.
August, how about you?
My pick is Live Fast, Die Old by Frank Turner. Like, the title kind of says it all. Like, the idea of, like, living a lot. And like the first two lines are, I bought my soul back from the devil and now I'm keeping it all to myself. Just that vibe, thinking about Bobby and Crowley. And yeah, it's a good song. I recommend it. I'm not playing to pass time, I'm playing for keeps. We only just started and you're throwing the fight. It's a very Supernatural-esque sort of song. Could work for a lot of characters with a lot of points in this series, but works for Bobby today.
Beautiful, beautiful. My pick, I had to go with the song that I picture Bobby and Rufus smoking cigars, drinking a little brandy, hanging out, having some beers, getting, it comes on the radio, and mamas don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys by Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson.
Oh yeah, yeah,
love that.
Absolutely go hard on that.
God tier suggestion.
It really just fits. It's too late for them, but hey, don't let anybody else end up here.
Listen, it's my goal to grow up to be a cowboy.
It's vastly overrated.
Are you saying it's not like in the movies?
You know what? It's actually kind of not like in the movies. You'd be surprised.
It's not what I wanted to hear.
Horses poop constantly, first of all.
I know that that's the downside you're starting with.
I mean, that's the most important one. Do you want to be knee deep in horse shit constantly? No.
No, I can't say that I do.
Horses are great. I love them. They are also assholes, and we'll let that be known. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the downsides of cowboys. We're here to talk about...
We will get there. There's other episodes for that.
Now that we've got our mixtape playing, it's time for this week's hunt. Today, we're pulling up to season 6, episode 4, Weekend at Bobby's. We're viewing it through the theme of failure.
Anywhere anyone wants to start?
I think we've got to start with the representation check, because rep check? This episode is so gay, and I loved it so much.
Thank you. Oh my Christ. Thank you so much.
It's constantly gay. Oh my God.
I'm so glad this is where we're beginning.
You got Crowley and Bobby. Their chemistry is off the charts already, right? Mocking each other's accents.
Yeah, we just lead right into like this like enemies to lovers dynamic that they absolutely have got going on. He's like, yeah, you have my soul, you know, you also gave me back the use of my leg. It's just like a whole
like you're too good to drink with me. Like Bobby, why do you want him to drink with you so bad?
Mm-hmm.
You miss fine, you can say that.
Bite me. Oh, if that's your thing. Okay.
The thing is that I love about Crowley is that whenever anyone flirts with him or even looks at him, he just flirts right back. Like he doesn't have any of the shame that means that he will get embarrassed. He just, like, if they make a comment, he just expands on it.
Crowley is fluent in flirting.
Able to make all of the men uncomfortable. We love it.
So good. It was so good. But not just the Bobby Crowley dynamic. Then we get the Bobby Rufus dynamic. And that's even better. It's so good.
I love them. Oh my God.
Bobby and Rufus have like old married couple/old flame vibe. Like in this episode specifically, I was like, I'm getting a lot of like old flame vibes. Of, like,
very much so.
We had a thing a long time ago.
You know, he's just casually dropping what he wants for Hanukkah, you know?
You stabbed it 7 times. 5 times. Nope. 7. Fuck. Okay.
Correcting each other.
Yep. Don't swallow it. I'm gonna swallow it. Don't.
Bobby just knowing what Rufus is going to do, and Rufus knowing what Bobby needs him to do, but he won't ask for it.
So good, because then by the time that Bobby does ask for it, Rufus has already started, and he's already doing it. Yeah, I got you.
It's there. He's like, yeah.
I do love the jump cut of Rufus, you know, oh, okay, yeah, I'll work on it. And then, wee, hey, I need help. What do I do?
Literally.
Always great.
Also, just the fact that Bobby is like sabotaging intentionally or unintentionally every other date op potential he has in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like and then going off and having these shenanigans with Rufus, and he just can't interact like a normal human in front of his neighbor in any way, for multiple reasons.
Also, Rufus seems to be the only person who calls him Bob.
Oh, I never noticed that before.
I don't think I ever noticed that.
Jody calls him Bobby.
Everyone calls him Bobby.
Rufus calls him Bob multiple times, but then calls him Bobby when he's trying to like, hey, I need you to know I care.
Little affectionate name. Little pet name.
Pretty cute.
Rufus having a pet name for Bobby. I wasn't prepared for that emotion today.
Oops.
They also put in the line of like that Bobby literally says, I'm asking for a ring.
Thank you. I'm so glad someone pointed that out because that screamed at me.
He also says, don't swallow. So.
And what does Rufus do?
No.
I would also like in the midst of this discussion, would like to give a shout out to my boy, Dean Winchester. For being on screen for all of 2 minutes and managing to do something so extraordinarily gay as well. I'm flicking my Bic for you.
Literally.
Sir, the amount of dick talk in this episode.
I had to look that up because I was like, is this a thing? And it turns out that was a marketing phrase used in the 70s by Bic lighters. They were like, flick your Bic. And they did it like to have a sexual innuendo in there to try and up their sales because they were trying to get better than their competitor.
So Dean heard that when he was a literal child.
Yeah.
And then when he was an adult, figured out it had innuendo and decided to start using it in 2009?
Yeah. Saying it to another man who's like, we really should get together more. Like Dean doesn't refute that when he says that either.
Another man who he's seen photographic proof of kissing his dad, so it's like, hey,
Charlie just has the gayest way of interacting with every man in this show.
Truly.
Every hunter other than Sam, he's just kind of got a, I don't know, he just interacts normally with Sam for the most part at this point. I think
picks on Sam a lot, like he has like a weird like brother dynamic with Sam almost.
Oh wait, where have I seen that before? Where have I seen a character having a brother dynamic with Sam while fighting with Dean? I wonder.
In the show, in the CW's Supernatural.
I like Carly's choice of saying get bent.
Yes, I did enjoy that one as well.
Instead of any of the other choices that he could have chosen, he had to choose one with gay innuendo.
I gotta say, like, the more that I watch, the more that I do, like, this specific, like, Queering Things rewatch, the more I'm noticing that Crowley might be the gayest character on the show, just outwardly anyway. Like, he's the most open about it. Like, he's gay to literally every person he meets, and it's amazing, and I commend him for it.
It's so good.
Man's queer as shit. He'll kiss anybody.
Yeah. You know, for business or pleasure.
The devil's trap that he makes for Crowley. Sorry. The devil's trap.
Going Dateline on your ass.
Please tell me that's blood. It's not, because blood stains. It's gay.
Oh, it's so funny. It's just just line after line after line.
Check your wang or what, sir?
Crowley also calls him Robert. I just want to point that out, because that's also funny.
Like, why is everybody giving him pet names?
It's just his lovers.
Also, lore check. Crowley is King of Hell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's news.
When Crowley was introduced, I knew that he eventually became King of Hell. I didn't realize he was already, just the whole time, was just lying about it. No ulterior motive at all.
Well, it wasn't the whole time. Like, he was King of the Crossroads, and then when Lucifer became... What does he say?
I think after the apocalypse.
Oh, that's when he stepped up?
It's happened at some point in this year.
The demon they have tied up in that scene, Bobby's got, you know, with the bones that he burns and all that. She was in psych. So.
Of course. We get a nice little, like, montage. We get a lot of montage-y sort of stuff in this. And, like, back and forth between Bobby and, like, people he's...
Oh, yes. Can we talk about montage and editing stuff?
Yeah, let's talk about montage and editing stuff.
Well, no, I wanted you to finish your point about montaging.
No, that was just an invitation to talk about it. I just really like it as a choice.
Yeah, watching Bobby work overnight to help the boys and them just hang up on him without a second thought broke my...
Also, we see Bobby make some choices around substances and pills to to enable himself to keep going, which I think is, I don't want to skim over that, like that Bobby, it's not just alcohol. He's like alcohol and coffee and some undefined stimulant. Because Bobby seems to be like at this, like you real, like this episode's really showing how much Bobby does to, I mean, to go back to that theme, to go to the theme of this episode that we're talking about this episode, like to prevent the failure of other hunters, Bobby like just kind of fills in all of the information gaps of every hunter that he seems to know. Like he's the sheriff, he's the FBI, he's the researcher, he's the lore check, he's like whatever they need him to be, Bobby is.
He's the one that's ensuring they don't fail.
The one constant they can rely on.
Mm-hmm. And not just for Sam and Dean, but also for Rufus and Jody and Garth, which is a like, this is the first Garth reference we get.
Remember that, Noah?
No, now see, now I heard Garth and I was like, oh, now I swear DJ Qualls played a character named Garth in some show. Was that this one or was that? I'm pretty sure that's DJ Qualls. Okay. I think that's Garth.
Oh, I love that you already know.
Yeah, so yeah, this is I always forget that this character gets referenced in this episode, like, so early, like, in season six. I like also the interaction that they have over the phone. Where is it? He's telling Garth off for something, which is, I think, is pretty funny.
Oh, it's, like, not me, the FBI, Garth, the real FBI.
Yeah, because he's like, okay, yeah, now go call the FBI, and then hangs up and his phone immediately rings. God damn it, are you kidding me? This motherfucker.
My favorite is that he says, how are you still alive?
Oh yeah, sounds like DJ Qualls.
Oh, just wait. Just you wait till you meet this character. No, it's a good time. He's one of my favorite.
He's probably in my top five favorite side characters of the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bold.
Yeah. But you know... Bobby's keeping his ass alive right now.
Garth is not thriving. Also important to note in the lore section while we're here, it's wild that Rufus and Bobby both have Japanese-specific indigenous supernatural creatures. Just, they have their stats just off the top of the dome. They've just got that ready. That feels unrealistic.
And Bobby says specifically, I haven't seen one of these since I was in Japan. So, like, Bobby has hunted Okami in Japan.
And we know he speaks Japanese from Yellow Fever?
Yeah, one of them.
So Rufus and Bobby were in Japan together.
It feels strongly implied that they were on a vacation in Japan hunting.
I love that.
Or maybe they were on vacation in Japan and then ended up having to hunt. Like, they were trying.
No, that's what I'm implying. I'm implying that they took a vacation to Japan and a hunt broke out.
I love the idea that international hunters are a thing, you know, like globe trotting hunters that just keep moving, just keep hopping, exploring, cataloging.
What else did you want to say about like the editing and the like?
Yeah, I just like, I love it when there's episodes of Supernatural like this, and I don't have a name for them, but they are just like, they're ones that don't focus on the boys, and they just usually will have like, not just story-wise, a kind of different feel to them, but they'll also usually have like technical things about them that are different. And with this one, it's like the editing just feels so quick and snappy, and like it doesn't watch the same way, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't feel like a normal episode because of the like slice of life sort of approach that it takes, because that's not usually how a Supernatural episode is structured. Like, usually we get a monster of the week and then, you know, the boys having to figure something out and having some emotional conversation, and then they go on the hunt. And there's a very specific structure to the show. And episodes like this are always my favorite because they break that and do something different. And I love that that got to happen with, like, Jensen's first episode. And it makes me wonder, like, how much input he had as the director, like, on the editing choices and stuff that got made in this episode.
It's a lot of like quick scenes and also a lot of like a little bit of non-linear storytelling, which is always fun. It's a lot of like telling things kind of simultaneously, like having two scenes back to back, but they're not chronological, and a lot of short scenes as opposed to like longer scenes that we move through a bunch of plot points. Like it's like bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, it just makes the camera movement feel more dynamic, and like you feel like you're going just like you're watching a tennis match or something.
I think that's like really important for this episode as well, because we are basically in one spot the entire time. We are at Bobby's house, and like ever so briefly we go to outside of Bobby's house or in his basement, but we're mostly like in his living room with his office. We're very briefly in Scotland. We're very briefly like in the boys' motel room or with Rufus. And like other episodes, we're following the boys around and they're moving. They're constantly moving. And in this one, we're very stationary, but that movement of the directing and the editing really just kind of holds it together.
Yeah, it's actually really impressive.
Like, it's like a bottle episode, but if the bottle was one of those like mini bottles of water, you know?
I don't understand that metaphor.
expound on that. Tell us more.
Well, because it's like a bottle episode.
I know, I understand what a bottle episode is.
Okay, it's not entirely a bottle episode. Like, it's not, but there are more scenes that take place outside. So it's like a little bottle episode. And my brain was like, what if it was, never mind.
I now understand the point you were trying to make. Like a little bottle inside of an episode, where like part, most of the episode is the little bottle.
I am so sorry. That was the weirdest sentence I've probably thrown out there on the show. I hope y'all enjoyed it.
No, it was gold.
I really have a like kind of a fondness for bottle episodes when they're done well. Like, I actually really love them. I love what they do for character, because I think they also, bottle episodes, they tend to be very character, like they have to be, when they're good they have to be really character focused, and that's why this one like works, I think, is because we are just following Bobby around the same like three rooms, but so much is happening still, and so we're getting so much information about who Bobby is and like what his day-to-day life looks like. Like, you know, we're actually getting to see like an entire weekend at Bobby's, and it's very fun. We're seeing, also we're just seeing like how much happens in his life, you know. Like, I think the show in general tends to have like Bobby only feels like he exists when the Winchesters need him for something, whereas like now we get to see, you know, him going into town, we get to see him like interacting with a neighbor,
trying to eat a pie that he's never gonna get to eat ever.
That poor cobbler.
That whole set of events with Marcy, the neighbor.
Oh my god.
You know, they have a really cute little interaction where Bobby tries to play off the demons screaming in his basement as a horror flick.
And she says, have you seen Drag Me to Hell? And he's like, been trying to avoid.
Oof.
He's like,
He's like, I don't understand why you're trying to avoid a horror flick. This woman is trying so hard to make it clear that she wants to get to know him, including making up that one of her pieces of equipment, the wood chipper, is broken, which,
thank goodness she was making it up.
It's so funny.
I do love that wood chipper trumps pretty much everything.
Yeah,
that exchange is so fun and
such a funny lore piece too, because they don't end up needing the lore required item to kill when a wood chipper.
Feels like a D&D campaign, you know, they completely break the solution that the DM has in place. And what if we had a wood chipper? That would have to work, right? I guess you rolled a 20, so it's fine.
Chop the monster into a bunch of little pieces.
Bam.
And Marcy decides that
she's worth more than that craziness. No, thank you. I'd actually like to take this off ramp.
But actually, I don't want to get to know my new neighbors.
Yeah, she's probably moving after that too.
Yeah, I think I would be.
I really do want to know though what white chocolate popcorn is, because it sounds amazing.
White chocolate popcorn?
So not just popcorn with white chocolate on it?
Like, I would assume that, but like, is it melted? Is it in chunks? Like, I just want to experience.
What is your favorite? Does anyone have a favorite popcorn flavor, like that's not just like butter? Because like I would argue that is the best.
I am ride or die for white cheddar.
White cheddar jalapeno, pretty great.
I love a good kettle corn.
I had like a dill flavor. Ooh. That was really good.
Garlic salt goes hard. Jody bringing Rufus back to Bobby's without a single word.
Jody Mills supremacy
is huge thruple energy.
I love her so much. And I feel like bringing in like that failure, like Bobby consistently fails to take a break for himself, ask for things for himself, ask for that help. He actually asked Jody for help and she came through. And that's just like Rufus came through, even though Bobby like really couldn't bring himself to ask for help for like the longest time. But Ugh, Jody was just like, I had to pull so many strings, and if I lose my job because of you.
I love that, like, they've since the events of the episode where they fought together, that they've now built this, like, this relationship now where she is willing to, like, stick out her neck for him. Also, I think that's one of the funniest moments of this episode is Bobby on the phone trying to explain to Dean how to kill this monster and trying to also make it sound like he's giving a recipe to his mom. Like, now blend the herbs, saute over a high, like, it's such good writing and it's delivered so well.
Cook well.
Top notch.
And the cuts between it too, like the directing choices and like how they're cutting between those two moments and how they're showing us how, like, Bobby, it's got a lot of movement, that scene. I think the directing's really good.
It seems to focus on the connection that they have to Bobby. You know, like, it focuses on the phone and the conversation they're having there rather than the scene that's playing out around it. It's all about Bobby's connections to their world.
It's Bobby's world and we're just living in it.
Find it interesting that while, like, Bobby has that connection with both the boys, we really harp on his connection to Dean in this episode.
Mm.
And it kind of emphasizes, like, Dean's like, there's something wrong with Sam. Mm-hmm. Bobby's like, I don't have time for this. But, like, okay.
Yeah, Bobby's kind of an ass about that. He's like, you know, not the priority right now.
I love the look that Sam gives when he's just like, when you call me to complain about each other. Because, like, Sam just got brought into the room with Dean being on the phone with Bobby, and Bobby is now pissed. And it's like, Sam has a brain. He's going to put those two and two together that Dean was calling Bobby to complain about it.
I like that they give us that, but they don't give us the reaction afterwards. They don't give us the aftermath of any sort of conversation there. Mm-mm, that's not what it's about.
Because they had a conversation. Because they communicated.
So true. Wishful thinking.
It's also so interesting to see this. Like, we're so early in this season, and, like, we know that Bobby and Sam have had a bunch of interactions over this, like, year. And we also know that Dean, I think, is still pissed at Bobby for the fact that he didn't tell him that Sam was back. I think that tension is still there. And I think that frustration is coming out from Dean towards Bobby. And he's just really looking for Bobby to be like, yes, I also see this. I have also noticed that Sam is off and Bobby's not giving that to him. And, like, I get it, in this particular moment, Bobby's a little preoccupied. It's just interesting. I do think Bobby telling them off for, like, basically not ever appreciating him
is so well deserved.
Top notch.
He tells them they aren't the center of the universe, which, like, to be fair, the whole apocalypse
did kind of lead them to believe that everything was destined to end with them. So, like,
yeah, they've gotten a little inflated with their sense of self in their problems. For, you know, just casually stopping the apocalypse.
So whatever's going on with them has got to be the most important thing.
I really love that. That's kind of like how it's geared towards the audience, is they are the center of this and nothing else happens. And then we get to this episode and we don't see Bobby really outside of helping the boys. And then we get to this episode and, like, we know in the back of our minds, like, he runs all this stuff, yeah, and we never see it. And then we get to this episode and we see all of the things that Bobby does. And then it just kind of puts into perspective, like, Bobby dropping all of that to go help them with a hunt is so important. Like, that means so much.
And he prioritizes them.
And he loves them so much.
Bobby doesn't drop everything even quite the same way with Rufus. He shows up for hunts. Like, if Sam and Dean desperately need him, he will literally drive states away. And has multiple times to show up them. Like, they are his kids. He functions like their parent. But at the same time, like, recognize, like, he, in terms of the hunting world, like, Bobby, Sam and Dean may be narratively the center, but, like, Bobby has arguably a bigger reach in terms of, like, his influence in the hunting world.
Oh, for sure.
He's definitely, like, the center of that network.
It all relies on him.
Every time we get little hints about, like, how that actually looks, I, like, really, really love that lore. On the note of failure, like, I think Bobby feels like he's constantly, like, on the edge of failure. And that kind of his frustrations coming out in this episode. But, like, Bobby objectively has a lot of success and, like, contributes to a lot of success for a lot of hunters, even though he doesn't usually get to see the like results of that. He just gets the call, he gives the information, and then like how many hunters do you think are actually calling him back?
Like a 911 operator.
Jeez, he really is though.
He gets that initial phone call, he helps, and then nothing.
And then he just hopes he hears from that hunter again.
Hopefully hunters have a moment, you know, at least a day or two after the hunt, and they're like, okay, I'm just chilling. Oh, you know, I should reach out to Bobby. See how he's doing.
I think something about like with failure and Bobby is I feel like, especially since the demon pointed it out, was Bobby failing to save his wife. And I feel like he's constantly trying to make up for that failure.
Yeah.
He knows all of this stuff. He knows how to trap these demons. He's learning how that demons are just ghosts with a big ego, or like he's learning all of these things to like keep away from failure,
to make sure that the other hunters don't meet the same fate.
Yes, to make sure that. And he's like, if I keep failing at getting my soul back, I'm dead in 10 years, 100% gone. I should be able to get my fucking soul back. Why does it, everything keeps failing? And like he's trapped Crowley multiple times now. It just keeps going wrong.
And he's the one helping everyone else, but like no one is showing up to help him. Like it takes quite a bit in this episode before anyone is showing up to help him with his problem. I do think that like when Bobby says to Sam and Dean that like you two need to get your heads out of your asses, like I don't have my soul, like you may have slipped your mind that Crowley owns my soul and the meter's running, I think Dean didn't know that Bobby didn't have a soul back. I don't think Dean's been back long enough. And I think he assumed that Crowley held up his end of the deal, and after the apocalypse, Crowley just gave the soul back, because Dean has no reason to believe that didn't kind of go according to the plan. They haven't had any issues with Crowley. No one has mentioned it since they've been back. Dean would have no reason to ask. Sam should probably know. He's been around for a year, but like, I don't think Dean knows. Like, I think Dean is actually blindsided by that knowledge. As I think if he had known, I think if Dean would have known, he would have showed up for Bobby.
He would have showed up much sooner. I do also love his line about like, do I sound like I'm done? It's like, that is just the most dad line that he has in that whole bit. And the way that they react is very like, oh, sorry, Dad.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
And I just love like how instant Sam and Dean are like, just ask and we'll be there. It kind of just feels like Bobby didn't expect that simple of an answer from them. And like, he didn't expect that, even though they love him so much. He is their father figure. And I just don't think he ever like internalizes that. Like,
he loves them. That they would do for him what he would do. Like, that goes both ways. That like that means something to them. And like, I think maybe he sees like how their rocky relationship with John, and maybe just doesn't, he never gets to see them like interact with a parent figure like in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Winchester's parents healthy?
Like, I wonder if his like surprise is like kind of connecting in with John and how John treated them as soldiers and gave them commands and all of this. And Bobby says something that isn't like, you need to help me. Like, he just is like, my soul is in trouble. And they're like, just ask us, like, just tell us what you need. What do you need?
We're waiting for commands from you. I don't
like, we are here.
I think that the reason that he's so surprised is like, he has this, he's mad at them in this moment. And so it's like, he's not seeing them in the lens that like, you know, oh, these are the kids that I love dearly. Like, he says that to them, but in this moment, he's pissed at them. And so to have it be, you know, go from like, I'm angry with you for being whiny little brats, to of course, Dad will help you do anything you ever ask us to do because we love you, in this soft way. He's not prepared for that, I don't think.
And I don't think he's prepared, like, the difference between Bobby and John is, like, Bobby's not going to demand their help. Bobby's not going to say, this is what we're doing. And I think he just, like, forgets that he also can just ask, because he maybe, like, doesn't want to be their father. He doesn't want to be John. He doesn't want to be their drill sergeant. But, like, forgets that, like, your kids want to show, like, your kids care about you, and they don't, they're willing, which is a nice moment. I'm curious as to what everyone thinks about Gavin and that lore reveal, all of the lore around. We find out a lot more about Crowley in this episode and his family. Fergus.
Fergus MacLeod.
Fergus Roderick MacLeod.
Roderick MacLeod.
A fun twist that, you know, oh, wow, you think he's getting his son to hold for, you know, hold his own soul ransom, but really he just wanted to get more dirt because surely Crowley's son would have hated him because Crowley's a piece of shit. So, like, I don't know. It's a pretty good bet that.
But also, what Crowley sold his soul for.
So typical of Crowley, I feel like. If we're talking about an origin story for this guy, yeah, that tracks.
I just love that, like, he sold his soul for something, like, physically in his body, and then chose a different vessel to be a demon in.
He's like, actually, now that I have full reign and choice, I want this man.
I'm going to be, what is it, a publicist, a book publicist from New York? Yeah, I really love that Gavin hates him as much as as Crowley hates him. It's a really interesting, like, little twist that goes on.
Puts a real cap on the dick conversation in this whole episode. Yeah, that's why Crowley makes everything a comparison to dick size. That's what mattered to him the most at one point.
I would have loved to have seen Marcy and Jody get to interact.
Yeah, because they do interact off screen.
We know that they talk, but we don't get to see it. So we have an off-screen Bechdel.
Which is the definition of not passing the Bechdel.
Exactly.
We're having to make that much of a jump. At the end of the episode, when the brothers are on the phone with Bobby, they get honked at right before, like, right as the call's ending, right? Like, was that just my viewing? It feels like there was like a honk honk and it was a lead into the next episode type of thing, but
oh no, that was not because they were just like, I think they were trying to call attention to how weird the driving situation is, because, like, first of all, the two of them, these two giants, are crammed into this little British car, and, like, you know, and then also the fact that the steering wheel's on the other side, and so Dean's a little shaky, and so I think that car honk was supposed to be like, oh, look, like, somebody's
get on the other side of the road.
Like, not so great a driver at this moment.
Yeah, I think that was just for comedy's sake.
Yeah, I do think the comedy with, like, the conversation they have about Dean on the plane.
I had a fork.
Which, again, I also think really sweet, like, really sweet moment for Dean. Like, he doesn't, like, the one thing that could probably calm his anxiety would be to, like, drink on the flight, and he doesn't. He was like, at least I was sober. If some nut job decided to try something, I was ready. I had a fork, which, yes, is funny, but also, like, he cared enough about this hunt because it's about Bobby that he, like, white-knuckled his way through four puke bags. It's apparently Sam said, which sounds awful.
It's awful, yeah.
But means all the much more.
And that's, like, a long-ass flight.
I've done that flight, and it is long indeed.
Like, the Phantom Traveler flight had to be, what, max, like, 2 hours? Something like that.
I mean, most of it, they were occupied.
Yeah. So, I was just like, that's definitely the longest flight Dean has ever taken.
And he had to do it twice.
But he's just building his international hunting knowledge, you know? He's got to get to Bobby's level at some point.
We've gone international.
I hear they have an Olive Garden, like Dean Winchester.
They're the most American.
I just watched the end scene, and yeah, it's like, it's a comedic, like, Dean's like this and honks the horn and then, like, gets scared of it.
I just love the look of the two of them in that, like, especially, like, Jared crammed into that tiny little car. Because they do, like, cars over there are, like, tend to err on the much smaller side.
It's reminding me of the scene in Ted Lasso. There's a scene in Ted Lasso where the main character, like, it gets into, like, a tiny little British car and is, like, doing a whole little bit and being really silly about, like, where's the horn? I'm not driving. And then the wheel's on the other side. And it's very, and it's also, like, big man crammed into a small car kind of humor. It's very, so I do good. Appreciate that the humor in this episode, for the most part, is not super cringy. It's, like, just kind of silly.
A bunch of dick jokes.
Yeah, there's kind of a couple, there's only a couple of moments that are, like, of their era, sort of, like, a little bit sexist humor. But there's also funny lines like, do I look like Dr. Phil to you?
As soon as he said that, because I was like, I remember when that part happened, I was like writing down something. And so he's like, a little bit. And so I just looked up and I was like, huh. It was like, I had that realization.
You see, sorry to like kind of jump back to, you know, Crowley and Bobby.
Do it.
Crowley, like, I don't think we've ever seen this, engraved the contract into Bobby. And then the part is on his naughty bits.
The part he didn't want Bobby to read, he put on Bobby's genitals, which is a choice.
Totally normal thing. Really average sort of decision that you make on a regular weekday.
And now, could Bobby have read that and gotten the drop on Crowley at some point? If, like, is the moral here, check out your dick every once in a while? Like, I mean, okay, first of all, for STI safety, please always check out your dick every once in a while. That's just general knowledge. But as far as demon contracts go,
Bobby doesn't seem like he knows that it was written in his skin, and like he's just like, this hurts like a bitch. Yeah. And then he's like, yeah, leaving the part about my legs.
Yeah, he constantly realizes that he's about to be played again.
Yeah, he's not here for that.
But definitely a decision made by Crowley, and definitely queer. We love that for him.
We arrive back where we started, which is, you know, that Crowley, everything Crowley does is gay.
Including Bobby.
I love that we can get an episode where Dean is in approximately 2 minutes, and we can still spend most of the episode queering.
Dean's our main queer, but he's not the only one.
Everybody else has a little touch of it, at least.
a little sprinkle. I do think it's interesting that Dean, like, when Dean does try to open up to Bobby, and he says to Bobby, you're the one person I can talk to about this stuff, about Sam, about leaving Lisa and Ben. I mean, I don't even know what way is up right now. And I think it's really unfortunate that Bobby is going through a thing and he gets blown off so hard, because it's like a rare moment of like
vulnerability from Dean.
He acknowledges it, and then he kind of closes right back up when he realizes that, like, Bobby's not really listening. And I think it's also interesting that this is the one person he can talk to about this stuff, and I think that's primarily because Cass is not around. Because I think Cass would have also potentially been someone he would have talked to about this stuff.
I would have liked to see how Bobby would have incorporated Cass into the Hunter Network. What information could he keep updated on from Cass? I don't know. There's something. Bobby and Cass need to team up more often. Well, as we wrap things up, it is now time to slide into our favorite section of the episode. It's the character blessings. Who would you guys like to bless this week?
I'll go first. I would like to bless Marcy, because she just wanted to go on a date with, you know, her cute mustachioed neighbor. And she ended up covered in blood from her wood chipper, and that just sucks. And probably is going to need lots of years of therapy and moving of house. So I'd like to bless her for her struggles.
I think I would like to bless Jody, because she really came through and I love her so much.
I love that we get to know more, see more of her personality in this episode.
Because she's really like at the beginning, or like she's like, I'm trying to help out. And then Bobby's like, well, there's a body out there too. She's like, fuck.
And she has one of my favorite lines when she like pulls up to where Bobby is waiting for her. And, you know, he's like, you know, found your guy. And she's like, Luther Vandross, tell him I'm a fan. Like, I really loved that.
And then like, she's like, no, I can't do this. Like, I'd have to cash in all of my favors. And then she does it anyway.
The Bobby effect.
I would like to bless Dean, because he tries to open up to Bobby this episode, and it doesn't go well because Bobby's also going through stuff. And it's just rough when you can't share about your thing because someone else is also going through a thing. That's a tough place to be in, especially when you're as emotionally constipated as Dean and Jester. But he's trying. He's trying to, like, I appreciate that Dean is trying to work through his whole, like, worry about Sam and his feeling, figuring out Lisa and Ben. And Dean's like going through it at the beginning of this season, and he's fairly alone in it. And I just want to bless him for like trying to reach out. And I want to imagine that him and Bobby get a chance to have that conversation, like after they deal with the Crowley soul situation. Love that.
I had to bless Bobby this. I mean, it's Bobby's episode. It's Bobby's week. So major blessings to Bobby. He shows that his grind truly never stops. He's always watching out for the boys and the other hunters and everybody, and is giving it his all, and is finally calling people out for not reciprocating that enough. And I love to see it. Blessings to Bobby. And he's got his soul back. That's got to feel so good.
Now we can focus on Dean and Sam.
Yeah, now I can go back to being a parent.
Yay. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Thanks so much for coming on again, Sarah. It was an absolute blast.
We love having you.
So fun.
We will have all of Sarah's socials. We'll have it all linked in the episode description. You should definitely go follow them all over the place.
Well, okay, not in real life.
Not physically.
Follow them on socials.
Digitally.
All over the internet.
Do not follow them all over the place.
The social media follow.
Twitter and TikTok.
The social media places that we have posted in the episode description with permission from Sarah. Nobody pull a Bobby. Nobody go into research mode. Just go on TikTok. Have a good time. Someone start talking so that I can stop talking.
So make sure you're subscribed to Saving People Queering Things wherever you listen to podcasts and share our show with your friends. You can join us in our free Discord server where you can find links to our socials and catch up on our latest season mixtapes all on our website, queeringthingspodcast.com.
Be sure to ride along with us next week as we explore season 6, episode 5, Live Free or Twy Hard, through the theme of crisis.
Thank you all for coming along for the ride, and we wish you a peaceful road until we meet again.